is Jack Spierko, and welcome to Podcast Edition 2 today. This is yet another one of my podcasts. While rolling down the road on my way to my office in the morning, I'll be doing them both in the morning and in the evenings as I drive to and from my office. So you're going to hear some noise. You might even hear me yell out occasionally at a driver because this is being done as a side effort. I don't have a tremendous amount of time dedicated to editing this podcast. So this is pretty much one man's view of the world and the world that we're heading into, and how to live the life you want if times get tough or even if times don't. So with that in mind, today's podcast is going to be about the eventual collapse of modern civilization, or at least United States civilization as we know it. And I do think it is an eventual thing. I think it's not if the society will collapse from what we currently recognize it as, but when. Now, I am not one of these people that think, oh, it's imminent, it's coming, you better prepare right now, or the whole world will end in the next 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. There's been so many people that have predicted a collapse, predicted the end, predicted an explosion that never came. And I think we should have learned from those folks by now that predicting the when is not what it's really about. As you may know, if you've listened to Podcast Edition 1, my goal here is to help you live the lifestyle that you really want, whether or not such a collapse occurs. So we're not really so much worried about, you know, when it's coming. It's what do we do in case it does come? And how do we make sure that things what we're doing in case it does come are still going to give us what we want if it doesn't? So that we're not sitting around living hand to mouth with buckets full of rice and beans, waiting for doomsday, and short selling ourselves on all the beautiful things that there are in life. But we do have to take a look at the reality, and I think that having a better understanding of the way things are likely to occur may help us be a little more optimistic and be a little bit more intelligent about the way that we plan and not going to extremes. When you go to extremes, you tend to make yourself uncomfortable when you don't need to. Now, here's what I mean. There is the possibility that, let's say, a giant asteroid strikes the Earth and changes the modern world as we know it, or one of these nations out there that have nuclear weapons tosses a few of them around and doesn't bring an end to all life but really destroys the planet, or that, you know, all that oil that we think is still in the ground isn't really there and we end up with no oil, or that countries that are supplying us with oil refuse to supply us with oil and grind the economy to an immediate and abrupt halt. All of these things are possible. Their probability factor is very low. If you understand the interdependence of the global economy, it's not just the United States that's dependent upon the rest of the world, it's also the rest of the world that's highly dependent upon the United States. And because of that, there's a lot of redundancy built into all these systems, and that's a good thing long term. But the reality is that the interdependence that creates the redundancy also creates the vulnerability. And what I mean by that is when enough of the interdependent systems fail, we have to begin what I call a spiral down. And that's going to be really the gist of my message today. I don't see the United States economy and the modern civilization, the Western world, turning into some doomsday apocalypse overnight, UN stormtroopers showing up at your house. Whatever this doomsday scenario is that a survivalist can dream up, I don't see those happening. I think what it's important to understand is that something like an oil shortage doesn't have to mean we ran out of oil for it to completely debilitate and destroy the economy. We are seeing the effects right now of $130 to $140 a barrel oil. Now, it's bad. It sucks. But when you really look around, I see thousands of cars around me. I see right now I'm driving past some very large, beautiful glass buildings. And there's people in there working. And most of the space is leased. And most of the economy is running. And despite this impact of $4 gas, you know, everything's kind of still working. The question is, where's the breaking point? Where do people just go, I can't do it anymore? Where do some of the what we call the working poor, the people that make, you know, a little bit over minimum wage to drive to work every day, go, you know, it costs me exactly as much to drive to work as it does that I get my paycheck after it's all said and done with? By the time I pay my insurance on my car, and by the time I pay for the gas that goes in my car and the maintenance that my car has to have, you know, I actually don't make any money working. It's costing me $800 a month to go to and from work, and I make $1,000, and the government takes $200, and I'm back to $800, and I can't even feed myself anymore. And I'm better off just dropping out of the system, so to speak. How many of those people does it take dropping out of the system to start to slow the system down? If we get to a point where we have, let's say, a 10% shortfall of oil, 10% less than we actually need to keep everything running, it could be devastating. And it's not going to be devastating in this again, atomic collapse. What'll happen is that you'll slowly begin to see people wake up to the fact that mostly what we do is run on a wheel like a gerbil. And more people start getting off the wheel. And then the lower elements of society, the vermin that will steal more. And we're already seeing rises in crime. Now look, I'm not a big time a liberal from a governmental standpoint anyway. And I don't say, you know, oh, the poor guy that knocked a hole in 10 school bus tanks and stole the gas out of them, he's just coping with the environment. No, I think he is responsible for his actions and he should go to jail. However, you know what? No one was doing that 5 years ago. And it's the criminal response is a natural occurrence when the economy starts to have these type of fluctuations. So what I eventually actually see happening here is that we start to see little pieces and little pockets and little sub-industries of the economy begin to slowly collapse one at a time. And we start to see our economy and our nation change. And we start to realize that, you know what, we're going to have to start producing more of what we consume and more of what we use, both from a necessity and a luxury standpoint in America again. We're not going to be able to always rely on the Chinese to ship us cheap goods, because what's going to happen is that $2 item is going to end up being a $20 item, even if it's produced in China. Number one, because it's going to cost a hell of a lot more to get it from China to the United States, because fuel costs have gone up so much. And then the other thing that's going to happen is the American dollar continues to weaken against the world economy. And those two factors together, we're going to have to see our nation change. Now, will it change in a drastic way, or will it change in a moderate way? We don't really know. But what we can expect is more of a slowing down and kind of a spiraling effect, and seeing one system upon another system slowly collapse. Now, least you think that's a better scenario, I would like to remind you of a storm called Hurricane Katrina. For about 5 days, the people of New Orleans absolutely knew that Katrina was going to make landfall on their city. And in spite of that, the skies were blue and the weather was nice right up until the end. And a lot of those people, even as the waves began to roll, even as the first storm clouds began to go in, just sat and waited and figured everything would be okay. And the worst thing that would happen is there'd be some damage and maybe some flooding. And then, you know what? Everybody would come in and help them. And people tried to help. You know, we got a bad rap for, you know, the government not taking care of the problem or whatever. And it could have been handled better. But in reality, millions of people contributed to helping those areas recover. And it wasn't just New Orleans. New Orleans was just what was on our TV set every night. And it was because so many people decided to just sit and wait. And I think as we start to see our economy go into this spiral decline, we're going to see a point where you should really take your money out of all stocks and put it into better commodities, or put it into cash. That maybe you shouldn't hold 100% American dollars, that maybe you should put some money into some other economies. Maybe some of your money you hold in dollars, but some of your money maybe you hold in Australian dollars, and maybe some of your money you hold in pounds. To diversify the effects of the declining dollar. A lot of these things are going to be easy things to do, even if you don't have a lot of money, even if maybe your total net worth in cash assets is $30,000 or $40,000, it may go a lot longer if you protect it. But you'll see people refuse to protect it. You'll see, the survivalist will be sure that when it all collapses, he's going to be able to grow his own wheat and rye, and that being dependent on the stores is foolish, so he won't stock up. Even though he's a survivalist, he won't stock up on grains. But the fact is, grains are dirt cheap today. grains last for years in storage, and that the best way to stockpile grain today is to go out and buy the stuff. The best way to get your pinto beans today, if you want to store up some pinto beans as an emergency source of protein and carbohydrates, is to go to the store. You can buy a huge bag of them for a few bucks. You know, buy a couple bags, shove them off in some 5-gallon buckets to give them some extra protection. You know, purge the suckers with some CO2 and seal them up. And in a couple of years, you know, maybe get some more. But you'd be surprised how long that stuff lasts. It lasts a lot longer than the conventionally quoted shelf life. These things last forever. I just read an article about scientists planting some seeds from a date palm that was found in Masada, which is where Jews committed suicide when they were attacked by Romans 2,000 years ago. 2,000-year-old date palm seed. They planted it. It grew. They grew healthy. That gives you an idea of how some seed crops can be stored. So I guess the overall message here is don't think that as long as it looks okay, it is okay. Because that's not the way this is going to be. And the longer it takes, the more people are going to get hurt. If it all collapsed tomorrow, people would run out and grab what's left and make do with what they had. And you'd be amazed at how much is really there. I mean, we've talked about how quick in some natural disasters that store shelves are cleaned off and all. But as long as you know it's coming and a lot of these warehouses and all are able to keep the product moving and all, we could have people stock up. And if you went out and bought things that last a long time and that you are very cost effective, you know, most of the country could make do okay. If they went into the kind of like, okay, I've got 2 months to repair mode, and they believed, I've only got 60 days here. Now, if we have a point where people think we have 6 days, it's going to be really bad, and it's going to be that nightmare scenario. But if people really believed it was 60 or 90 days left, they could kind of really, the system would work enough to get everybody there. With it being a year, 2 years, or 10 years, there's plenty of time. But the problem is when there's plenty of time, the preparedness doesn't happen. So think about it this way. When you were given, let's say, a report to get done in school and you had the whole semester to do it, what would happen is you'd go, I'll start on it next week. I'll start on it next month. Hell, I got to the end of the grading period. And you ended up cramming it into the last couple days. And it was never as good as it should be, but, you know, you got it done. But if you had taken the time, you could have done a really good job on it. You could have learned more. You could have got a better grade. And in this scenario, getting a better grade means either surviving versus not surviving, or in many instances, it won't be surviving versus not surviving. It will be surviving comfortably versus surviving miserably. Surviving on your terms versus surviving because somebody else is providing for you, the government's providing for you. So that's something to think about in your preparedness. The next podcast we do, we're going to go more into some practical things that you can do. I just kind of want, in these first couple of podcasts, to lay the groundwork for my philosophy, where I'm coming from with this, why I maybe have a different take on some of these things, why my solution to having wheat or grain or beans is to go buy them versus plan on growing them. Not that we're not going to grow stuff like that in the future. We are. But, you know, there's a time between when, you know, the shortfall hits and your crops are available for harvest. And that could be 2 years in many situations, because you have to make the land produce and you have to get the crops in the ground. You have to get the crops produced. So that's the philosophy I'm coming from. And remember always, the podcast here today with Jack Spirico is about helping you live the life you really want to live, if times get tough or even if they don't.